Who wrote Peanuts? What was the guy's name?
Charles something.
You gonna help him?
Charles Schultz.
Schultz.
Well, how come you don't have a T here? I'm having trouble here.
Hey, neither does Charles Schultz.
Really?
Really.
But it's, how do you pronounce Schultz?
Schultz.
Without the T?
You put the T in there because you that's the way Germans would pronounce it.
Okay.
It's Schultz. Isn't he the guy that doesn't see anything and doesn't know anything?
No, that's Hogan's Heroes.
Hogan's Heroes, but who is the guy?
Colonel Clancy.
That was Sergeant Schultz.
Sergeant Schultz. Yeah.
I know nothing.
I exactly. see nothing. I know
well,
nothing.
Glenn, welcome to the microphone. I have seen you. I know I've seen you somewhere. But I know that you're going to run for an office. But we're not talking about running for office right now. There's going to be a time, and our producer will I'll give him the heads up, and we'll give you about 5 or 7 minutes on the political side. But I don't want to go there yet, Keith.
I thought I didn't know him, but he said he met me at a Rotary Club. Yeah.
A couple of times you've been at Rotary.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So I
one time I spoke, and most of the people stayed. I was surprised.
I want to go back and find out something about Glenn Schultz. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Give us some background. You got some boots on, so you're a pretty good man, and some jeans. So tell us about it.
Wait a minute. I don't got boots on. So does that mean I'm not a good man?
After what you did to me yesterday, don't even bring it up.
Okay.
Right. Well, I apologized and everything this morning, but now you're doing it to me again.
Okay. Glenn, where'd you born and grow up?
Well, I grew up in the Wisconsin area, just outside of Milwaukee.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
So you've been to the circus parade?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Baraboo, you bet. Yeah.
That circus thing is up there. I knew that.
Yeah, Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, real famous up there. Yeah.
We did a Calliope album when I had my recording studio here. Most interesting album I think we recorded.
Yeah, they did a great job. I mean, that was some great publicity.
So where are you from, Cambridge?
From Cambridge?
Wisconsin.
No, I'm from outside of Milwaukee.
Okay.
A little town called Lannan and Sussex and Oconomowoc, the Lake Country area.
As you come down towards Chicago, where it was at KSI, who was the big implement company, was right. It's leaving me.
Case's there.
Yeah. What's the name of that?
The Alice town. Chalmers was there.
Do you remember the name of the town?
Industrial. Kenosha?
Yeah, that's right. Because once you get north of Chicago, it kind of blends together until you get up towards Milwaukee. So.
Yeah, and that keeps pushing together, too, as
it's crazy,
population
isn't it?
Grows.
So you grew up there?
Yep, grew up in that area. Really loved Wisconsin, beautiful nature, a lot like our area here.
Sure.
Yep. But then eventually work took me to Germany.
Okay. Really? Work.
Electrical engineering.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Huh. So, we were talking about your brother-in-law and his little thing in the heart deal and all that jazz.
Yep. Yep.
Maybe he could have done that for him.
Well,
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So took you to where?
Took us to Germany.
Wow.
And we really enjoyed our time in Germany. Had a major client out there that spent time out in Germany. Had an office in Belgium as well. I was running my own company for the last 15 years, electrical engineering consulting.
Which part of electrical engineering, commercial, industrial, where were we at?
Oh, great question. Industrial.
Okay.
So computer control of factories, robotics, motors, drives, all those kind of things.
Well, robotics have been around a long time, and they say they're taking over the world, but let's just get something out of the way. They're not going to take over the world. They have to be programmed by somebody.
Right, yeah. Great jobs in programming robotics. You can make good money in that industry.
Did you take Keith?
I did, and, you know, I never thought about having robotics until I bought a CD-DVD duplicator, and you put the CDs or DVDs in, and then the robotics take over. They take the thing out, they put it in the deal, they dub the music, take it out, put it in the printer, print the thing, put it in the deal. That's all robotics, right?
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, that's usually what you really are working with, is an arm, essentially, in industrial automation. It's not a full-figured person like we see in the news these days.
Right.
It's really just an arm.
And let me ask you, Glenn, robotics started big time in the auto industry.
Yep.
Because all of a sudden, you watch it go through the assembly line, and this thing is grabbing it, turning it, pitching it, welding it, moving it on.
Yep.
It's crazy how they work.
Yeah, welding and painting are probably the two biggest applications in automotive for robotics.
And which side did you say your expertise was on?
That entire scope. So the entire factory, power.
Powder coating, all that
the
stuff?
The whole thing, yeah.
Wow.
And any type of industry as well, baking, you name it, glass.
How do you fuss as a—go ahead.
Baking. How
baking.
Does robotics work for baking?
Well, factory automation is throughout that process. So anything from mixing the batch to baking it to packaging it to putting it in pallets, it's
all robotic.
Heavy robotics in there, you bet.
Did you know that?
I would say that I knew that, but I've not. So when you see an operation, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Because they're programmed. It's just like laser cutters and other things that are programmed, and you watch your guy at a metal plant take it, and then you see the flat steel laying over there, and he programs it, and all of a sudden, kicks it on the other side, and whoop.
And you made fun of my thunder the other
day? Yeah, I thought your thunder was pretty good. But it's amazing, but it all goes back to programming.
Right.
So how do you fuss or fire a robot?
Well, you can fire a robot by decommissioning it.
Yeah,
unplugging it. And it does happen. I mean, the automotive industry will turn over a plant every 5 years or so, just completely gut it and start over.
Really?
Technology's moved on. The processes have moved on. And so it's not unusual.
What was it that got you interested in that when you were a little guy? Did you start building with Legos or something? Or, I mean, what?
He's old enough to get an Erector set.
That's right, Erector set. Lincoln Logs.
I remember Lincoln Logs. They were great.
Yeah.
They were fun.
But no, really, by seventh grade, I was heavily interested in electronics. I had my ham radio license in
seventh grade.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, so that really captured my interest, and I just stayed with it ever since.
And your university, which did you choose as a university?
Been to several, UW-Madison for electrical engineering.
Yeah, it's at least it's not Madison, but that's all right.
Yeah, I got my master's certificate at Marquette University.
I like Marquette. They're going to be good in the tournament. That's another team. Don't let your guys.
Are they? Yeah,
they're good.
Okay.
They're very good, Marquette is.
Yep, so.
And then from college, you went to work with this company?
I actually started at a company called LaBelle, was my first major engineering job, and they are the sole supplier of the M16 magazines. So when we went to Gulf War, we were cranking out M16 magazines like crazy.
So did you create the M16 magazine with the electrician's tape?
No, sir.
Were you taking double the, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Keith, you take a magazine on the M16, let me give it to you, and you put it in.
Yeah.
That ain't enough. So the military guys would take another one, put it underneath it, electrician tape on the bottom.
Oh, really?
Put them together.
Yep.
So when it was done, flip it out and put it back
away
in.
Away we go. Wow. That's a quick way to reload.
Yeah. We made the magazines. They were empty when we shipped them to the government, and then the soldiers would do the loading of the magazines.
Why did the AK-47 have an angled one and M16?
So did the M16. The M16 started out as a straight clip.
Right.
But the military determined it wasn't enough capacity. And so they wanted more ammunition in the magazine.
When I was in Vietnam, I wanted more ammunition.
Yeah. So the only way you could do that is to curve it so that it doesn't
stick out so far from the gun. They wanted the profile of the gun to stay.
So the AK-47, which was a great weapon, okay, you could find them in the sand, in the mud, whatever, still shoot them, Keith.
Huh.
The M16, you'd have to question it because it was where was it made, Keith?
Well,
in the United States, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's crazy. A magazine. There's a lot of magazines that go to these rifles. Now, M16s are no longer around, right? There's a different...
They're still used, yeah. In fact, they still produce a lot of the magazines. The successor company from LaBelle still is producing them.
But that company only did the magazines. They didn't do anything
else on
the gun.
They got a call
one day and said, hey, we want you to build magazines.
That's right. It was surreal, though, because we had a factory primarily of women. And it was just surreal to see these 50- and 60-year-old women stripping down M16s as fast as any soldier could possibly do it, slapping in a new barrel, getting it on the firing line, and ready to test.
I'll tell you what, I like that. I like the M16, but that wasn't my weapon of choice. May I tell you my weapon of choice?
Please do.
Well, I wasn't a real good shot.
I think you liked the grenade.
They gave me a 45. That wouldn't work because I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So I said, the only way I could do with it is take it by the handle and beat the guy upside the head. So I walked into the gunnery area, and I looked, and there was a weapon. I said, that's what I want.
Machine gun.
A sawed-off shotgun.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. But I was so naive, I asked if you had to put the plug in, and only for you hunters will you know what I mean by that. In Vietnam, you got them all. So then, LaBelle. Now, am I wrong? Did LaBelle, were they broader than that? Did they have any helicopter experience at all, LaBelle?
No, that was Bell Industries.
Bell, okay.
Yeah,
sorry,
this was LaBelle. So this is a small company in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, and they did have a long military contracting history. They made the original two eyepiece glass masks. Gas mask.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was real popular. You probably wore one of those in your time then.
I did, and you know what the test was when you had the gas mask on? Mm-hmm. You had to put it above your head, take it off and put it above your head for I don't know how many seconds or minutes, Keith, but it was terrible. I mean, gagging and choking and everything else with the thing above your head.
Why?
What did you say?
You mean up here like...
No, it's, yeah, when you're in the gas chamber.
Yeah.
Part of the training was you had to take the gas mask off.
He left off in the gas chamber.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, go ahead.
But then I left LaBelle after that and went to Rockwell.
Oh, big
company. Yep. Great company. Really
Rockwell satellites and other things, right?
Yep. Yeah. Used to be able to, before 9/11, I used to be able to walk you up under the space shuttle to stare up at the engines on the space
shuttle. Boy, you just flip Keith's trigger.
Oh, yeah. I'd be all over that.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great tour.
Have you seen some of the shuttles take off?
Yes.
Boy,
that's something I would have I would love to have done.
Yeah. Mm. It'll rattle you to the bones.
Oh, my goodness. You know, 5, 4, hold. What? Hold. We can't hold now. But somebody saw something, didn't they?
Too bad. Yeah. The computer probably at that point.
How has that industry changed?
Well, I'm not directly connected
I know
with
that.
Anybody, but when you look at what Musk has done, you know, with the SpaceX program, it's just incredible at the rate that they're developing private space contracting. It's just amazing.
It's getting fun to know you, and we're going to have to change horses, but I want you to do me a favor, because I can tell you're a man of upper intelligence. Even with a Wisconsin background, you're fine. You're dressed well. You look like a good hillbilly. You're going to make a good alderman, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But I want you to take Keith to task for me for just a minute. Would you mind?
Not at all.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, wait a minute, Glenn.
Keith?
What?
Tell him that anybody with an iPhone can land something on the moon. Tell him, would you please?
Glenn, I got to give you a backstory. We were talking the other day about this little thing that they shot up, I guess it was Musk guys or whoever, and it landed on the moon and it fell over. Right?
Right.
Okay. And I'm saying that this phone right here has more intelligence and more computing power than the old days of the Apollo and all of that kind of jazz. So when they shot this little thing up there and it landed, and by the way, fell over, I didn't go, oh, man, that's so cool. Because I remember when it really took effort and really took computing power to land our guys there and we brought them all back safely.
Yeah,
and here this little thing falls over.
I agree with you. I mean, it's amazing I can't take him to task.
No.
Because it is amazing.
Yeah.
When you look at the old computers in the space shuttle even, that was an old IBM 360 because it was the only computer that they had space qualified at the time.
Wow.
In fact, the original computers flew with core memory, little donuts for every bit of information. Was the original computer in the space shuttle.
Wow.
Now, they gradually upgraded that as time went on. But you're right. I mean, what we carry around in our pockets compared to the original days of the space program is amazing.
So then why did the little guy fall over? I mean, that was kind of interesting.
That was a little engineering problem there, I guess.
I thought, and you're an engineer. You know what that's like. But you're not like the ones I work with on the architectural side. And here's what they write. I've drawn these plans for you, and you can go build it the way you want to. Whatever you do, don't go by these measurements, and don't hold us accountable for anything we wrote on this paper. Is that a typical engineering statement?
You don't get to do that in electrical
engineering. I'm sure you know. All right, we're going to change
plug this baby, and it may work. I got one more question we change. So from Wisconsin to Branson.
Yeah, so we were in Germany. This is a cute story. We're in Germany, and it was coming up to Easter. And my wife and I said, gee, we really don't have anything scheduled for Easter other than Easter service, of course. What should we do this year? And we said, well, why don't we go back to visit some friends in the U.S. that had moved to Missouri? I said, because we're going to have to start eventually thinking about a good place to retire. And they live there. We thought they could kind of show us around. So we flew from Germany to our friends in Marshfield, Missouri.
Oh, sure.
Okay. And we stayed at their house there. And we went around with a realtor and looked at property, and we were really clear. I mean, we were painfully clear. We were just window shopping, but we had given them this long list of things that if we were to find an ideal property in Missouri, this is what it would have. And it was started with maybe 30, 40 acres, you know, something like that, and a whole bunch of features. So after we got done with the tour of the real estate agent and being very clear that we're just window shopping, we're not here to buy, by Easter Sunday, we had put an offer in on a ranch.
You put on that list things that you knew they would never find.
And they found them all. That was the problem. They found every last one of them. So my wife and I were just delighted. It was some beautiful property. So we started a cattle ranch up there, and we ran that cattle ranch. Just in Webster County there.
Sure. Okay.
And so we ran that cattle ranch for the better part of 10 years, just really enjoyed it. It was a hobby thing for us, but it kept growing. We got it up to 220 acres, and we leased another 40 acres for hay production, and it was just my wife and I and one teenage hired hand that ran the whole thing.
Wow.
Really enjoyed it.
That's great. And how did you get to Branson?
Well, who wouldn't come to Branson when you have a chance to retire?
Right.
So I took early retirement and my wife and I promptly moved to Branson.
Huh. Well, I'm glad you're here. When you called the other day, and I want to start this by telling people, we're talking to a gentleman. His name is Glenn Schultz. He's running for Branson Alderman Ward 2. And Herb, if you'll start our timer here, and when we're finished with this interview, if you have a competitor who would like to
7:50 is where we start.
And he wants to come on the program, we'll give him the same time that you have. So, Keith, let's do like we normally do and dive right in. Keith.
All right, Glenn, we're coming up on an election in April 2nd for offices locally here and what have you. And I'd like to find out, how did you get interested and why did you get interested in politics and why here in Branson City Council?
Yep. So I've been following the Branson City Council for a couple of years. As I said, I took early retirement from running my own business. And as I watch the council work, I think it's done great strides in the last couple of years. I think our city really has come a long way. I think we've got a government that is doing a fantastic job, generally happy with most things that we're doing. But as I watched it, I could also see that there were going to be issues that would require strong leadership from our elected representatives. And some of those things relate to topics that you guys have probably talked about and heard others talk about it many times, such as housing, such as the blight on Highway 76, those types of topics. And I felt, boy, I have the time, I have the expertise, I have the experience. I really should offer my services to the city to try to get some of these tougher issues solved.
So you're running for alderman in?
Ward 2.
And that is what part of the city?
So it's the historic district all the way up to 76, and then you kind of cut over to the hospital along 65, and then you flip on the north side of 248 all the way up to the high school through Branson Hills, that area.
Okay. And then over the farthest, you were in Ward 2, Keith, which had been up Bee Creek Road to Fagan.
Oh, yeah.
And all the way up, that's that is the farthest north and east portion in Ward 2.
Okay. Right, correct.
And so what are some of the, are you, this first time running for you, right?
Yes, it is.
Are you replacing somebody that is also running?
No, I'm running against the incumbent for Ward 2. So as you know, there's two aldermen in each ward, and they get elected on alternate years. Mm-hmm. And so this is the year that Chuck Rodriguez is running for re-election, and I'm running against him.
Now, why, when I go in and I vote, do I check your name? What qualifies you above the incumbent or the other people at that ward?
Yeah, so what I've been talking about is the issues that I think affect us as a city. So housing is a big one. When you look at our housing situation, our elected officials have talked about it for many years, but I don't think we're really solving it yet. We've got a problem with affordable housing for our workers. All you have to do is walk around the city and you see how many help wanted signs there are in the city. You know, we've got the issues with these long-term stay hotels that we've been struggling with, and yet we still don't have enough housing, and there's no significant plan to develop housing in the city. So we need a plan that makes affordable housing. The studies show we need at least 230 a year. I think we're quite a bit behind that already, so we probably need 600 to 800 houses in the next couple of years, living units in the next couple of years. We've got to get that done, and we've got to get it done on an affordable basis.
Well, that's the problem. As a real estate developer, I must say that what affects that is pricing land, excavation costs, and all these things. So you can talk about it all you want to as far as solving the problem, but somebody comes to me, I can't build a low affordable housing. I need some government help with this.
Yes, and so I think there is some of that possibility. I mean, the city has tools in its toolbox to make this work much faster. We've got tools like eminent domain. We can annex property. We can purchase property. We can zone property, and we can put economic incentives on the table. The state also has economic incentives available to help with this, too. The problem is I don't think we have a master plan that pulls it all together, points to an area or two within our city that we say, okay, developers, this is where we want you to build this type of housing, and we're behind you to get this done.
I love that. Glenn Schultz is our guest this morning. He's running for Branson Alderman, Ward 2.
Beside housing, what's some of the other issues that you see you can lend some expertise to that need some attention?
I think the blight on Highway 76, particularly from the start of the exit on 65, all the way up to the CID district, since the CID district now is taking care of restoring that area, making it better. When you come off of 65 as a visitor and you really pay attention to that stretch as you're trying to get into the entertainment district, it's not a very exciting stretch. We've got some businesses that are great there that do a fantastic job of keeping their properties up, but we have way too much blight, way too much derelict buildings, empty lots, and things that just doesn't speak well to our city. I think we need the city to step up and say, these are the type of businesses we want in this area. Be very specific so that we don't end up with storage buildings, or not that there's anything wrong with it, but we don't need another ticket office. You know, we need things that will really benefit the entertainment district and look good as our visitors are coming in.
I have a question from an old-timer standpoint, because I'm an old-time Missouri boy, not an old-time Branson boy. We've only been here 33 years, and you're not a GOB from Branson. But I think this is important, Keith, and I'd like you to direct the question this way, if you would, please. The good old boys in the years gone by are in the past, Keith. We have a lot of new people that have come and share our vision and our dream. It's not just the guy that knows where the Owens Theater was at and what the river was all fished about. There are a lot of new people that have come to town that have the best interest in mind.
Well, do they? I guess that's the question, is how will you maintain what those of us that have been here for a while, and we don't go way back to the GOB necessarily, but we do want to maintain our Ozark legacy. How do you maintain that in Branson?
Yeah, I think, well, one is I agree completely with the mayor's statements that we maintain our faith, family, flag, and fun culture as first and foremost in everything we do in the city. So it's very obvious we've got a solid Christian foundation in the city, and I think we should continue that wherever possible. I think the government should operate under that guise as well. So I don't think we should have a cultural change in our city. We're a wonderful city of 12,000 or so people that happen to entertain over 10 million visitors a year. Mm-hmm. And I think they love to come to Branson partly because of our culture.
No doubt.
You know, they come and see what it is, and they want to live in a place like this. They want to visit a place like this.
Mr. O'Neill, take 2 minutes and have him wrap up with us of why he should be our Alderman in Ward 2.
Well, again, I go in and I see the name of the incumbent, and I see Glenn Schultz, and I'm going to make a choice for one, providing I live in that district. I happen to be in one. You're running in Ward 2. Charlie's outside the city, so tell me why those in available to vote for you should actually do that.
Well, I'm a candidate that's been out for the entire campaign cycle. I've held over 25 listening sessions by the time that this campaign is done, meet-and-greet sessions, I've called them, to make myself available to listen to the issues that the residents see within the ward and the business people see within the ward. I've been very vocal on where all of my positions are on the various topics that people have brought up and the things that I'd like to concentrate on as a candidate. So I think you can judge me from all of those expressions and capabilities and interests, and I'd ask for the people's vote on April 2nd.
Glenn Schultz, that will be on the ballot in Ward 2. If you live in Ward 2 in Branson, I encourage you to get out and vote number 1. And I would extend that encouragement to any ward you live in any city. And if you live in the county and you've got elections, they're coming up on April 2nd. Get out and vote. Glenn, thank you so much for being with us. And
thank
we appreciate
thank you.
Appreciate your time and appreciate you being here. And most of all, appreciate you getting involved. I was talking with Kathy earlier, and I said, you know, if I was younger, I'd run for something. But it's never too late, I guess, Mr. Ingram.
Never too late.
That concludes our interview politically. I need to ask you a question because I've worked through some things with you today. I worked through some things with you being a Milwaukee guy. So there's the Brewers that are up there, the Wisconsin. We got the Badgers. I get all that. Who upset Purdue? I get all that. But I got to go to the cattle ranch for just a minute. Go ahead and tell me that you raise Herefords. Don't tell me that you raise Angus or some crossbreed or something. What'd you raise?
My favorite was a Charlet Simmental mix.
Whoa, there you go.
Mixed them up
now,
again.
Now, they didn't have those in Gunsmoke, I'm telling you that for sure.
But those were a gentle breed. I mean, they almost acted like dairy cattle. They'd follow you around. And they delivered calves all by themselves. We never pulled a single calf.
Wow. Well, the Charlets
were... That would be a reason to have them.
The Charlets were a big rancher up by Mexico, Missouri. He was a state representative, and his name's leaving me right now. But a big guy with Charlet, kind of whitish hair, if I remember right. And you crossed him with what?
Simmental.
It was kind of reddish, if I remember right.
Yep. Yeah, so you ended up anything from white to red cattle across the fields.
Did you round it up on a four-wheeler, or did you ride a horse?
I did not ride a horse. We had neighbors who were great horse riders, and they'd help us out when we had to wrangle calves in from a pasture.
Yeah.
But so we would have a four-wheeler around, and we also used a Jeep quite a bit on the property.
I don't know, Glenn. You're not my kind of cowboy.
Yeah, that's what my dad said.
Have a horse.
Charlie, go out and wrangle that calf. It's been very fun. Thank you so much.
Glenn Schultz, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Peanuts and Schultz, the same, no T, but you pronounce it with a T,
well,
Keith.
Yeah,
come on, buddy.
Well, what can I say? It's just the way the
language
goes. Yep. All right. Well, we're going to continue Good Morning Ozarks. You don't have to vote for Charlie or I because we're not running for anything. But do get out and vote in your elections that come up in April. Then we got again in August, and then we got November. So make sure you get now. If you're not registered already, you're too late for the April one. But you got to get registered for the next election coming up.